Our topic again today, which was very aptly addressed by Brian Mason, have Albertans given the Stelmach government a free ride? And so I would like to invite Brian back up to entertain questions. I'll remind you that there's one question per person, that please use the microphone at the back, and please try to make your question fairly concise. So Brian, can we have you back up on stage, please?
Hello, my name is James Moore. Brian, I like your analogies about the hidden plan or the plan without naming it a plan. In this context, with reference to the super board and the new plan that we don't know about for healthcare, I've noticed that Minister Liepert is using April 1st, 2009 as the date of implementation of his super board. And I don't believe it's a coincidence that that's the same date as the Tilmer Agreement becomes into full effect. Mm-hmm. And the Tilmer Agreement, as we should know, prevents anything that will impair or restrict investment. Would you maybe just speak a little bit to the coincidence or the lack of coincidence of those two dates?
Well, it's interesting, James, that you mentioned that. It's not something that I'd really connected in my mind, but I think it's a. We know now a lot more about Tilma than we do about what Ron Liepert's plan for healthcare is, I imagine. That there's a possibility that they may be moving towards this new plan for healthcare in some coordination with Gordon Campbell's government in British Columbia. But beyond that, I'm not sure I can really comment on it at this stage because we haven't really researched that connection yet, and I think it will be difficult until we know more about what Liepert has in mind. Certainly private delivery looms very large in the plan, and we know that much. So there may well be an impact that Tilma will have on how that unfolds.
Beth Mundell-Atherstone. Thank you, Brian, for coming down to Lethbridge. I'm glad you spoke about the Copeland Clinic in Calgary. I'd like to know what you think the federal government can do about the privatization of healthcare in Alberta. Could you speak to that?
Yes, well, certainly under the principles of the Canada Health Act, the federal government does have the authority to prevent certain things or to cut off federal contributions to Alberta, which they've threatened to do in the past. Particularly with giving enhanced access to publicly insured systems. In other words, the queue jumping component of what's happening there is something that I think that they have authority to withhold funds from Alberta. The question is the will of the government, and we've seen wide changes in the political will of the federal government through Liberal and Conservative governments to do that. And if we go back to the days of Monique Bégin as the federal health minister, she was quite prepared to stand up to the provinces and quite committed to protect our public health care system. Subsequent Liberal governments have not been nearly as committed to that goal, and particularly the Conservative government of Mr. Harper, in my view, is not committed to that goal at all. In fact, will do what they can to collaborate with the Klein government and other provincial governments that want to move in the direction of private health care. So I would say, if I can be a little bit partisan for a moment, that much of this will depend on the outcome of the federal election, and in particular whether or not Harper receives a majority government, because I think if he receives a majority government, we'll see a rapid acceleration of the process of privatization of our healthcare system across the country. Well, welcome to Southern Alberta, Brian. It's good to sit close to you where we can visit again. My question for you, Brian, when, you know, did the Albertans give Stelmach a free... Paul Hinman. Sorry. The question on did Albertans give Stelmach a free ride, I was always envious on the amount of money that the NDP caucus received. You've been around for some time now, and we had an election. You were able to spend an awful lot of money, but your net votes didn't go up. I think you lost 2,000 votes in that last election. But how do we, or you, or just other Albertans in opposition, get out and get the message out there in your mind? Because you had an opportunity, you spent money, but yet there was no increase in your vote from Albertans. And I guess, like I say, to address, did we give them a free ride? Albertans did vote that way, and we had an opportunity. But how do you address that?
Well, you really want me to my analysis of the last provincial election? Is that what you're asking?
Oh, I guess you could maybe expound on buying votes or whatever. But sure.
Yes. Paul, I've had a chance to look at the election finance numbers that have come out from the last election, and I want to congratulate you and the Wild Rose Alliance on a very, very dramatic increase in your fundraising. And I think that nevertheless the amount of money that was spent by the opposition parties was swamped by the expenditures of the Conservative Party. Conservatives spent $3 million on their campaign, and we were able to spend more than we had in the last few elections, close to $800,000. Nevertheless, I think the Conservatives spent more than the three opposition parties combined. So election finance reform is critical in my view. And I would model it on the federal government's system, which was pioneered in Manitoba under the government of Gary Dewar, which basically prohibits corporate and union donations from political parties and election campaigns, and substitutes some form of public financing for that lost revenue based on the amount of votes that the party received the previous time. In the federal system, each party gets $1.75 per year for each vote that it received in the last federal election. So I think that's an important reform that we need to make, given the financial power of the oil industry in particular, which contributed to the Conservatives. Now, the Conservatives had a lot of money in the bank. They actually had a significant drop-off in contributions from the oil industry as a result of the very modest changes to royalties that Mr. Stelmach brought in, which the oil industry didn't like, and they shifted a lot of their donations to the Wild Rose Alliance Party, which accounts for the fact that that party was able to raise so much more this time than they had in the past. So we need to eliminate the funding of politics by big business in this country, and we will be happy to give up the modest donations we get from organized labor. $50,000, and if the Conservatives would give up the $2 million a year that they get from big business, we think that would be fair.
My name is Mark Sandilands. Brian, I really appreciated your comments. They were well organized and succinct and to the point. I was reminded while you were talking of another speaker who was in town on Monday, Naomi Klein, who talked about the shock doctrine. And if anyone in the room has not read that book, I urge them to get a copy. It's now available in paperback. It talks about how the theories of Milton Friedman were adopted by large corporations and governments, the U.S. government particularly, to take money from average working people and put it into the hands of the wealthy. It happened in Chile and more recently Iraq and Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. I'm wondering if this model fits what Stelmach is doing in Edmonton with the oil companies and what Lippert is doing with the potential privatization of the healthcare system.
Well, one thing that's been clear to me for a long time, both under Mr. Klein and Mr. Stelmach, is that whenever the provincial government addresses an issue or a problem in the province, they are always looking for a private sector solution. It applies in child care and long-term care. It applies in health care. It applies in liquor stores. It applies in driver's licenses and license plates and so on. So they're always looking in that direction. Sometimes it's not a bad way to go. In many cases, especially when it comes to essential public services, we think it's not a good way to go. And it does transfer wealth from the public because there's usually an increase in user fees. Towards business. But if I can just address it in terms of the federal election, since the federal election is on, and you're a candidate and I'm your leader. not the federal leader. I wanted to talk about something with respect to this in the federal scheme, because when, for example, Mr. Krechen came to power, of course, there was very significant federal debts and deficit, and they set about a plan to eliminate that with Mr. Martin as the finance minister, and the strategy was to make significant cuts in federal spending, to cut transfer payments to the provinces. They cut funding in all sorts of areas. They cut transfers for health and for post-secondary education and certainly reduced the civil service and the programs that were being delivered by the federal government. And they turned the deficit into a surplus, and a significant one, so that at the time the Liberals were voted out of power, there was a considerable fiscal capacity of the federal government. In other words, they were bringing in significantly more money than they were spending. Harper becomes the Prime Minister, and he's introduced $8 billion corporate tax cut for the wealthiest corporations. So he's given up that fiscal capacity that was created by the sacrifices of ordinary Canadians. They paid the freight for that. And now he's transferred the benefits from that into a major corporate tax cut, a very significant one, as well as one of the largest military spending sprees that we have seen in this country since the Second World War. And that's where it's gone. And we're almost at the stage now where we're going to enter deficit again in the country. And I think this is one of the issues that needs to be addressed in this federal election.
I'm Trevor Page. Mr. Mason, I was interested in what you said about plans and planning in your talk. And I'm wondering to what extent you feel that your party's performance in the last election was because of your decision not to put a party platform up before the election.
I think had almost nothing to do with it.
So you don't think a party platform is necessary?
I think a very small fraction of voters vote on the basis of a platform. Very few voters actually read a platform. But we had a comprehensive platform, but broken down into different issue sheets, which were on our website. So we had comprehensive policy on what we wanted to do, but we wanted to focus on four major areas. And that's been in other places a very successful strategy. So no, I absolutely think that the vast majority of voters do not read party platforms. They do pay attention to the literature, they do look on the online, and they do pay attention to the media when they make their decision.
Well, in my opinion, that's why the Starmer government gets a free ride. Thank you. Knut Peterson is my name. Brian, I understand that Ted Morton is pushing the envelope on land use policies, and I also understand that farmers are not represented on that board. There was struck oil companies, hunters, and the like is on the decision end of things. Why is farmers not included on that policy finding, land use policy?
Are there no farmers at all involved in the consultations that he's undertaking?
There may be farmers involved in consultation, but they're not on the committee they're struck to decide.
That's a very good point, and I'll make a note of that, and we can raise that in the session.
Michael Cormacan, federal Liberal candidate in this current election. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you very much.
And for the great points that you made. Just like to clarify for everyone, the Liberal platform is out. I have a copy of it out in the truck, actually. And we have great enhancements. I want to assure everyone on behalf of the federal Liberals that we will be maintaining the publicly funded health system and trying to enhance it. There are several enhancements by way of monies in the platform, such as $900 million, which most of you should be very happy about, for catastrophic drugs, such as
Michael,
cancer.
Michael, are you getting up to your question? Like, is this background information for a question? It's a political... The debate is around the topic in today's session. Have Albertans given the Stalmat government a free ride? So do you have a question? Do you have a question to Brian Mason on that topic?
Please. I just found it interesting there, the observation by the Wild Rose about the funding generated and how it didn't actually translate into votes either. And my main concern is about the lack of apparent democracy in the province and what you would plan to actually do about enhancing that.
Sure. Yeah, no, I can tackle that for sure. I mentioned election finance reform, which we think is important. Another aspect of that has to do with third-party advertising and the Albertans for Change, which was primarily some of the building trades unions in the province, funded a campaign which was based on commercials alleging that there was no plan and so on. We felt that this impacted both us and the Liberals in quite a negative way because it generated sympathy for the government. And of course, it didn't take the Stalmat government very long to come up with a platform that looked like a plan and to counteract that advertising. The Albertans for Change outspent us on advertising by over 10 to 1, and it wasn't the message that we wanted to communicate. And so I think it had a negative impact on the outcome of the election. Certainly money is an important aspect. One of the things that I also believe strongly we need in this province is some form of proportional representation, where the Conservatives got somewhat more than 50% of the votes in this last legislature. In the previous legislature, they only received about 48% of the vote. And so if we had allocated the seats according to the popular vote, the last session of the legislature would have been a minority government in Alberta, which I think would have been tremendously healthy for democracy in this province. If you can imagine, in this province, with its lopsided majorities going back for 50 years to have a minority government. So that's the good news. The bad news is that Paul's party would have had the balance of power.
Hello, Brian. My name's Dwayne Pendergast. You raised a concern with respect to lack of public consultation from the Stelmach government. I participated in the Alberta Royalty Review, and I thought that was an exemplary example of a very well done public review, open and transparent. Everyone had an opportunity to have their say. They went ahead and acted on the results. I guess I must be wrong.
No, you know, I identified what I thought were two very major areas in the province where the government had a plan which it was not sharing with Albertans, and I didn't mean to leave the impression across the board that in no case had there ever been some effective public consultation. I think on the third way, and I think I did say this, on the third way there was relatively effective public consultation, and I will grant you that in the royalty review there was a reasonable public consultation, even though they did water the results down once they received them, which I thought was unfortunate.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. You're either a politician or you're going to be a politician or you were a politician up here asking questions today. Bridget Pastor O'Brien, thanks so much for coming. And people in the audience, don't think that this is the house. We're not. However, you talked about the Copeland Institute or whatever it is, and I have a few questions around that. I don't know if you know the answers, and certainly I don't. My concern is that they have said that they don't have enough doctors and that he's probably going to bring them in from the United States. So my question would be, are these doctors going to have hospital privileges, and are these clinics going to be able to connect instantly with the specialist that these people may be identified that they need? Or is this just going to be sort of like a primary health unit, which in fact in this area has been proven to be very successful? So my concerns really are these doctors going to have hospital privileges, or are you just going to be bumped over? So in other words, it's just kind of a place to push people through to specialists. Like, are they going to be they will be doctors, but do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, how watered down is this going to be? I don't know if you know the answer to that.
Well, I think the purpose of the clinic is to make money for the owner. It's for-profit healthcare, and they'll be providing enhanced levels of service and procedures that are not currently covered by Medicare. And you pay an annual fee to the clinic, and then you... I don't know the answer to that. So we can round it off at $3,000 a year, Mark. Is that right? So $4,000? I thought he said $29,000. Yeah. Okay. So a bit higher in the first year. So but you'll also have be able to get access to public care. Now, to publicly insured services on a priority basis. Now, he has said yesterday in Calgary, I was down at another event last night in Calgary, put on by Friends of Medicare, and it was stated there that he had claimed that the doctors he was bringing in were from the United States, so they weren't coming out of the public system. But the nurses and the technicians and so on he has hired here and will very likely be coming out of the public system. So this is the biggest problem with it is that it doesn't necessarily create more resources in terms of healthcare professionals and so on, but actually takes the best away from the public system and reduces the capacity of the public system, and that's the difficulty with it. The issue of hospital privileges, I don't know the answer to that, but I know many doctors no longer have admitting privileges in hospitals, and that's fairly common nowadays, so I'm not sure about that. But I do strongly believe that if this trend continues, we will move much more quickly than we think towards two-tiered private health care.
Brian, my thanks, too, for coming. Yes.
Excuse, we're getting near the end of our time, and I just wanted to say, I'll ask a question from you. Doug and Mark, can you keep yours very short? Okay.
With regard to these doctors coming from the United States, Brian, there was an announcement on the CBC this morning that two Calgary doctors have closed their general practice in order to work in the Copeland Clinic.
Is that right?
Which means that two groups of people in Calgary now have no permanent doctor and with a shortage are likely to have great difficulty finding one.
That's good information. Thank you very much for that.
Mark, again, I was just going to add a further piece of information. These doctors will bill Alberta Healthcare for the services that are billable. And then their salary will be topped up from the $3,000 a year that their cadre of patients pay. So Greg Flanagan pointed out at Monday night that they'll bring in about $1.5 million each, 500 patients times $3,000 each, and their salary will be based on that.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you all very much. It's great to see you all again.
Thank you, and we'll look forward to seeing you next Tuesday evening at the library and then next Thursday here as well. Have a good week.